Tomorrow, December 31st, is the last day of work for my first guest. Judith Kay has spent 25 years on New York State's highest court, the Court of Appeals. She has spent the last 15 years as the state's chief judge, the first woman to hold the title. Judge Kay turned 70 this year, and the law requires that she retire at that age. Judge Kay leaves a legacy of reform, from expanding the jury pool to establishing alternatives to incarceration. She leaves a legacy of landmark decisions, including the Campaign for Fiscal Equity ruling, directing more money to the New York City schools, the rejection of a death penalty law as unconstitutional, and her dissent in the gay marriage case. Judge Kay believes that same-sex marriage is or should be seen as protected by the New York State Constitution. She also leaves with some frustration over goals not accomplished, getting the legislature to unify the fractured court system, and perhaps most notably, not getting a pay raise for judges, something they haven't had this decade. We'll talk about all of that and how the recession is affecting justice in New York. Judge Kay, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
Are you bristling at having to step down? Isn't a mandatory retirement age a form of discrimination
on
its face?
I've stopped bristling because I've had a long time to get used to it, having read the New York State Constitution many, many, many years ago. I guess it's kind of a shock when you do get to be 70, but that's something to be thankful for. And when I put that together with the Constitution, this has been a day long coming.
Has this mandatory retirement age ever been challenged in court? It's based on your status of as a member of a group, not your individual competence.
Ironically, it has been challenged in my court many years ago and sustained as constitutional. And yes, I voted for it. Yes, it was a unanimous decision upholding the 70-year age limitation.
On what grounds, just briefly?
Well, we said it was a justifiable, fair, rational decision of those who create the Constitution.
One of your accomplishments was expanding jury service. What's that story you tell about your daughter's reaction to jury duty in the old days?
Well, she once called me and said, Mom, this is a great place to meet guys, when she herself was down there for jury service. And so the story I tell, which of course is fabricated partly, is that I decided at that point to upgrade the jury pool to make it a better place to meet people.
So in all seriousness, you ended exemptions for doctors, lawyers, judges.
Ooh,
wow.
We had, I think, 22 categories of automatic exemptions. That meant all you had to do is check a box, and you were automatically excluded from the pool of potential jurors. So who else was there? Firefighters, police officers, people who made prosthetic devices, people who wore prosthetic devices, Christian Science nurses, on and on and on, depleting the jury pool so that the few people left who had no box to check, they had to be there for a minimum of 2 weeks, because we do have a large demand for jurors in the state of New York, and particularly in the city of New York. And so they had to stay. They were on what was called a permanent qualified list. It was no honor to be on that permanent qualified list. That meant you get called like clockwork every 2 years, minimum 2 weeks jury service, no fair, no fair.
Now you go in, and if you're not seated on a jury, you get out in about 3 days, don't
you?
Yeah,
that irks me too.
Why?
Well, it bothers me when people come up and say, Judge Kay, hey, what you did was so great. I was only there for a day, and now I don't have to go back for 6 years. It's like we want people to come in to see the interior decoration of our courthouses. No, people should come, be seated on juries. They should be respectfully treated. We should have efficient court proceedings. So this day in and day out doesn't really please me, and it's something we need to work on, because like 82% of the people who are called do get excluded. There's something good about it. They do get to be oriented and see something of our procedures, but they should overwhelmingly be seated, not excluded. That's chapter two.
And maybe changing who gets called is an end in itself for fairness to all of us who get called for jury duty. But do you think it's also affected justice in New York? If jurors are more diverse, are their decisions changing in any way you can tell?
No way I can tell. And I think the intention was to have as broad and diverse a pool, you know, to be judged by one's peers. That's the anchor the jury system was intended to be, anchoring us to our democratic principles, fairness, justice, equal opportunity, et cetera, equal justice. So I see that as a very positive development. This 82% leaving the court after having seen the interior of our courthouse, that's something we need to work on.
In 2006, the court voted 4-2 that same-sex marriage is not protected under the New York State Constitution. So mandatory retirement ages are, same-sex marriage is not. You were one of the two who dissented. When was the state constitution written? That aspect of it that would apply to same-sex marriage.
Well, our current state constitution was written in the year 1938. Oh, goodness, coincidentally, the year of my birth. Why does every public appearance I make these days
come
begin with the year
right
of
now.
With the year
well,
of my birth?
Wouldn't you assume that in 1938, the framers of the state constitution never thought about gay marriage, and if anything, probably assumed marriage was understood to mean a heterosexual union?
Well, that's assuming that you freeze the frame in 1938. I don't see it that way. We've progressed a bit since 1938, have we not? And I think for the year 2006, for the year 2008, how we view equal protection, equal justice, equal rights, the institution of marriage, as you can see in my dissent, it changed. And indeed, our first constitution was written in 1777, so maybe we should go back to that.
Conservatives would call this judicial activism, interpreting more than the writers of the Constitution meant to put there.
Well, I think judicial activism is a phrase that we apply to any decision with which we disagree. Ironically, in my case, I found a couple of weeks ago I was praised in the New York Law Journal for being an activist, meaning a wise and careful jurist, and I was derided in a tabloid for being an activist, meaning making the kind of decisions that people disagree with. But I think if you want to give a judge a slap across the face for a particular decision, you say mere activism.
One way or the other. Mm-hmm. New York State Chief Judge Judith Kaye, my guest on WNYC, her last day of work tomorrow after 15 years, heading the court system in New York State as she reaches the mandatory retirement age. Do you ever wonder, by the way, before we get off gay marriage, why the state should oversee the institution of marriage at all, except for potentially abusive situations like underage marriage or maybe polygamy? Why shouldn't this entire realm of human relations be for church, not state?
This is not an issue of church. This is an issue of state, non-church, non-religious marriage. And we have a healthy tradition of state constitutional rights and state constitutional protections in addition to the federals. But we're not talking about religion and church here. We're talking about the many institutions, adoption and many, many institutions which are regulated by the state.
You ruled with the majority in the Campaign for Fiscal Equity case, directing billions of new state dollars to New York City public schools because the state constitution, and again it comes back to the constitution when we talk about the Court of Appeals, guarantees a sound basic education, those words. How hard was it as a judge, not an education expert, to decide what dollar amount represents a sound basic education?
Well, I have the great privilege, I have still until midnight tomorrow, of sitting on the state's highest court, a second level of appeal. The matters begin in our trial-level court, as they did here, where the issues were exhaustively heard, lots and lots of expert testimony, reams of expert testimony, fact testimony, lots of very careful fact-finding by the trial judge. The case then went to the intermediate appellate court. By the time it reached my court, the highest level of appeal in the state system, I had an awfully good record to rely on, which I did. And we are bound by the record. We don't go outside the record. And I felt, while you're quite right, I'm not an educator. I am a jurist. I study the record and apply the best judgments I can.
Judges have to be generalists in a way because so many aspects of life, of law, come before you who can't be an expert in everything.
It's an amazing day at the Court of Appeals. I guess what disheartens me a bit is how infrequently the public wanders into our courthouse. I wish more people would come.
And it's free and open to the public.
Free
no
and open to the public.
Required.
No tickets. You'd be amazed what a day at the Court of Appeals consists of. We could have like a teacher tenure case. We could have a multiple murder case. We could have a slip and fall on a patch of ice. We could have the gay marriage case all on the same day, five or six cases being argued of with absolute, you know, taking you to the ends of the earth in subject matter. I can't imagine anything as challenging as what I've had the privilege of doing actually for 25 years.
Still on Campaign for Fiscal Equity, here in the recession, the promise of that ruling apparently will be at least deferred by the governor's proposed budget if passed by the legislature. Could the court jump in and say the cuts violate the agreement?
Fortunately, other people will decide that, right? Could it happen? I guess the challenge could be brought. Will it succeed? I have wonderful colleagues in whom I trust that judgment.
Could the court say the education cuts are unconstitutionally deep in ways that other aspects of life are not protected by the state constitution and therefore direct the state to balance the budget
Won't
in other ways?
Won't that be an interesting decision?
You expect somebody to raise it sounds like.
Well, everything is brought to the courts, absolutely everything. In fact, since I still have three of my law clerks with me and no January cases to prepare, I decided we'd plunge into a research project. And the subject I chose, because it comes before the courts all the time, is sidewalk trees and the law. And we've been having a dandy time, but that just illustrates the point I'm making to you. We've had lots of cases involving sidewalk trees and what kind of a railing you put around them, who's responsible, the city, the adjoining building owner, the who has a responsibility to maintain the sidewalk. And given Mayor Bloomberg's initiative to plant 1 million trees in New York City over a 10-year period, I think we'll have more tree litigation. My point is not about trees. My point is everything comes to the courts. Everything. De Tocqueville was right.
But since the two biggest areas of state spending, just to take those as two big examples, are education and Medicaid, health care in general, does the Constitution guarantee a sound basic education but not guarantee a sound basic access?
Well, you're driving me back to the same point that I am trying just valiantly not to answer, because I know that we will be faced not just with this particular challenge, but I can see the same issue arising in many different areas of life.
If I ask you 2 days from now when you're not the chief judge, then would you be able to answer the question?
No, I think I'm still going to leave the decision-making of that sort for my colleagues.
What can you say about how the recession and the implied big state budget deficits are affecting justice in New York State?
Clearly, the answer is profoundly that they will. If we don't see it yet, and we do see it a little bit because the governor asked us to cut back our budget with its modest increase, and we did. And we are good citizens. The court system is a good citizen. We will continue to be mindful of the state's and the nation's economic situation. So on the one hand, we see the internal pressures to make our budget leaner. We always say we have a transparent and lean budget. We have to make it even leaner. We need more judges in certain respects, family court judges. We've been begging for more family court judges. I can see that that is one instance that grows more difficult. So that's half the answer to your question. The other half of the answer to your question is undoubtedly the impact of the economy on people, whether it's their homes or their businesses or the criminal cases, or undoubtedly the economy is going to really have a tremendous impact on our dockets. I think it will unquestionably increase our criminal dockets. I can see the mortgage foreclosure cases. You know, you can't foreclose a mortgage without a court order. Mm-hmm. So I think we will be more heavily taxed and in maybe different ways, in ways that we haven't yet seen. And on the other hand, we are challenged internally to be leaner
Just so people don't misunderstand, you're saying the court system will be more heavily taxed, more to do. You're not saying taxes will be going up.
No. Oh, my goodness, no.
Just trying to prevent
the
emails.
I know the word tax, right? It's like the word activist, right?
Here's a comment that came in for you on our webpage. It says, Judge Kaye's experience and common sense would be a great asset for New York in the U.S. Senate. Would she consider serving out Senator Clinton's term, or at least for 2 years until the special election will be held?
Well, I've seen that. It's so flattering, isn't it? But I guess my reaction to that is our governor has so many difficult decisions to make, so that's one I would relieve him of.
What you will be doing, you were telling me off the air just before we went on, is getting involved with adolescent justice, juvenile justice. There's work yet to be done there?
I can see that my life has definitely turned in that direction. I came onto the court 25 years ago as a commercial litigator. I had been with large law firms and had an extremely satisfying, productive life as a commercial litigator. In my 25 years as a judge, my interests have so totally turned to the family area because I see how profoundly the courts affect that area of life. And I must say, in recent years, it's really centered most on adolescents, juveniles. And I think I could do so much in that area in helping to keep kids who are kind of at the edge of a cliff because they're in foster home after foster home. They're facing maybe a criminal conviction. They're facing early pregnancy, you know, huge life determinative decisions. And I think whatever I do and wherever I land next, that's going to rise to the top of my activity list, which I hope will be very, very full as it has been these 25 years, because I don't know what else I would do at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Those kids on the edge of a cliff, would you like to see more alternatives to incarceration programs for
them?
Absolutely,
absolutely. I think that is a life determinative moment, that moment of adolescence before kids are dragged off into, or whether or not dragged off,
so
go
like
off.
What could the court system be doing differently
well,
for
one,
them?
Well, one small thing we've decided that I've embarked on. I was in Anchorage this summer with the chief administrative judge at the chief judges conference, nationwide chief justices, and I took a little break and visited the youth court of Anchorage, Alaska, where I saw something really interesting. We have lots of youth courts, but this one was much more, let's say, professionalized. And I came back, called the district attorney in Staten Island, said, let's do it here. No, he said, let's do it here. So we're doing it in Staten Island. It has three parts. The first part is an education for high school kids. They take a bar exam, education in the law, in justice, in trials. The second part is they actually hear misdemeanor cases. Meaning that at the end of the teenager, the 15, 16, 17-year-old, will receive a harsh punishment if found guilty of the accusation, restitution, criminal behavior modification, community service. But the person will not have a criminal conviction. I think that criminal conviction is really life determinative. Once you have a criminal conviction, it follows you to school, it follows you to renting an apartment, it follows you to getting a job. I think we could be much more, I was going to say intrusive, but I think constructive is a better thought. Seeing that that person has a second chance and hooking that person to a mentor, that's part three. Hopefully keeping the person from the edge of the cliff.
And from our comments page again, related to this, can you talk about the proposal for a state public defender? This is something that you've wanted and did not achieve,
yes,
correct?
You've enumerated a few of what I would consider, well, you could call them failures or you could call them lack of achievements. And the criminal justice system has been very high on my agenda always. And I think we could do a much better job with a statewide public defender. I must say that was a thought that I had, but I appointed a commission. It was headed, staffed marvelously, headed by great people. They came back with that suggestion that would be a really effective way for us to deal better with criminal justice issues for needy people.
So we have to rely on private organizations like Legal Aid Society to defend the indigent now? Is that the point?
Yes, we well, it's all the Legal Aid Society in New York City and other organizations such as that, and public people who step forward to do
work.
This. Yes, it pro bono or virtually pro bono. Yes.
What does it cost to keep a New Yorker in prison for a year?
Oh,
do you know?
I've seen like $25,000-$30,000, something like that. Really outrageous when you think how much better we could do with that money.
That's many times the tuition at SUNY.
Boy, you know it. We could do a lot of good with that money.
From our comments page, if New York legislators believe that mandatory retirement serves some purpose, perhaps they should retire at 70. Joseph Bruno would have been out 9 years ago.
Well, interesting, because I've been getting some wonderful letters from my colleagues across the country. I just got one from the Chief Justice of North Dakota. How nice it is to be alive and receive this praise, not to wait till you're gone and not hear good things. But he wrote saying he's so much older than I am, it seems unfair. But I told you, I'm completely reconciled to this. I think I can have another good life. Not as great as the one I've had, I have to admit.
We're running out of time. Any advice for the next chief judge?
Go for it. There's so much left to do. I don't consider anything that I've done in the court system to be finished. I think we've made some very good advances. I like to think of it as a court system for the 21st century, and that means you can never take your eye off, not for a moment, because needs change, demands change, and we always have to be responsive to the public.
A list of possible replacements for you was submitted to the governor and contains no women. Do you think the list is discriminatory or deficient?
Well, I'm reconciled to the list, too. I say I'm first of all, the first requirement for chief judge of the state of New York is to be always an optimist, to know that you can improve things and never accept the way they are. And the second is to be a realist. I'm a realist about my retirement at age 70, although I don't call it retirement, I call it transition. I'm a realist about the list and the constitutional process for designating my successor. There are 7 excellent candidates. I know the governor will make a great choice.
Well, Chief Judge Judith Kaye, thank you for all your service to New York State. Let's keep talking when you're back. Transition to the private sector, yes?
Thank you. Absolutely.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. We'll get the latest on the troubling and fast-developing Middle East situation from Chris Dickey of Newsweek. Stay with us.